what we do is helping, and helping at every level, you know, from the resident to the staff in the building, to the ED, to the regional, to, you know, folks in the home office. You have to make sure at every single level, people are not just saying yes, but hell yes to what you're doing, or else it just doesn't work.
Welcome to season 8 of Bridge the Gap, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. The BTG Network is powered by sponsors
Align, NICMAP,
ProCare HR, Sage, Hamilton CapTel, ServiceMaster, The Bridge Group Construction, and Salinity, and produced by Salinity Marketing.
Bridge the Gap in 3, 2. Welcome to Bridge the Gap Podcast, the senior living podcast with Josh and Lucas, one of my favorite cities, Fallnick, Austin, Texas. We're getting this kicked off with a high energy, high impact, and we have an awesome guest on today. I want to welcome George Netscher. You are the founder and CEO of Safely You, and you also have a big announcement today, and we're going to dive into that here in a moment, but thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Obviously, for operators that are here at NIC, there's a number of things that are probably top on their list, and that's going to be safety and health and saving money. Those are probably three big buckets that they would like to focus on, and it's a big part of what you have launched at Safely You. Before we dive into the new announcement, I always found it very interesting to know the backstory. You could have started a tech company to do 100 other things, but you have focused on senior care. Do you have a personal connection to that?
Yeah. So my mom lives in one of our communities. So going back 10 years, we knew my mom was genetically predisposed for Alzheimer's, and her big sister had it, has now passed. Her mom had it, has now passed. It kind of always played a role in our family, and just saw how, you know, my parents are immigrants from South Africa, and living away from their family and seeing all the challenges and how do you manage that, the level of like guilt associated, you're trying to care for your kids, you're struggling with, I'm not there for my mom. Like, that was a lot of the genesis of like, I want to build what I want so that by the time my mom is there, I'll have kind of the platform in place that I want. So that's really been the journey. It's just like, how do I make sure I have what I want for my mom? And so now she's, you know, in one of our communities and all of that stuff. And I'm really happy to be where we are.
So Safely You, a lot of people, I would say the majority of people at this event have now heard of Safely You, many of your clients and you're in communities, but you've been at this a long time. So tell us a little bit about that grind and to bring us up to modern day.
Yeah, we don't get the Safely Who anymore. Or the, like, you know, when I was first starting the company, this idea of putting a camera in somebody's room was a crazy idea, but we could see how much it really helped the folks we were serving. And it was just like, I knew, you know, for my mom, it was like, if she can't necessarily advocate for herself, I need a way to give her a voice. And that was like the core premise is like, if, how do I give her a voice when she, you know, over time might not be able to tell us exactly what she needs. And we see that in senior care in general, that we have a lot of vulnerable folks who can't necessarily give the like, hey, like I could use a little bit more help with this thing, or I'm spending a little bit more time isolated, things like that. And there's a lot of opportunity for us to kind of give folks a voice, show those blind spots that folks, you know, might not have. So you asked about kind of the early days. We went one step at a time. So started as my PhD research at Berkeley. I had the good fortune, a little humble brag here, getting accepted everywhere for a computer science PhD. I turned down Harvard, Stanford, MIT, went to Berkeley because I found faculty that were also affected by Alzheimer's disease. And so the goal was just, there's gotta be some way to combine these new tools in AI to support folks with Alzheimer's. So I was this very weird PhD student, no intention of getting a PhD. I wanted to drop out as soon as, you know, we could find a way to help. But also everybody else is working on like self-driving cars and all the stuff that you're seeing come to fruition now. And I'm spending time in, you know, assisted living communities. And, you know, how do I spend time with older adults and find a way that I can help? So we actually worked on 3 different projects. And this was the one where we saw like the jaw-dropping reaction from, I remember the first ED we worked with, it was like, do you know what we have to do with unwitnessed falls? You know, like we used to be able to send a staff member with a resident out to the emergency room, but nobody is staffed to be able to do that these days, right? And so it's like, if we find somebody on the ground and we don't know what happened, it's called an unwitnessed fall, and when in doubt, send them out. We send them to the emergency room. And that is so hard for so many reasons. So that was the first like aha of like, okay, we can really help there. So we showed with that first community an 80% reduction in the number of falls. We wanted to make sure that was reproducible. That's been a lot of our journey, is like going one step at a time, really making sure what we do is helping, and helping at every level, you know, from the resident to the staff in the building, to the ED, to the regional, to, you know, folks in the home office. You have to make sure at every single level, people are not just saying yes, but hell yes to what you're doing, or else it just doesn't work, right? Staff aren't going to use it, whatever else. And so from those first 10 communities, they, you know, became our first customers. I will always have a lot of love for Carlton Senior Living. They were our first early partners. Dave Glutzy, shout out to that team. It's been just amazing. And then we kind of grew from there. It's like we, back in those early days when we were raising our first rounds of funding, our first round was a 500K round. It was really, really hard. It was really hard because it turns out VCs claim they want to be disruptive, but they want to be disruptive in places where there's already a proven, like the customers, we know who the customers are, we know how they buy, we know they can grow at venture backable rates. We're in the, basically what VCs look for is, can you grow 3X year over year up to 10 million in revenue, and then can you double year over year from there? Nobody, there was no like Uber for senior living, you know, like there's no path. And so we just had this, you know, hypothesis that we could, if the product really helps, we could land and expand. That we'll start in a couple of communities, and come budget season, if it's really helping, we'll go to more places. And so we showed that if you actually have a product that really helps and drives through NOI and staff really love it, then you can kind of earn the right to do more and more. And that's been a lot of our journey.
Yeah. What a cool backstory. So we're pretty lucky, me and Lucas here at Nick. I mean, so you get to make sort of an announcement today, and I'm like afraid to let me be the one that it comes off my lips, but I believe it's called the Halo.
It's right? Called Halo. So cue the Beyonce music.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad you said that, because I was thinking that, and I was like,
edit that in.
Yeah, I was like, that was so cheesy for me to be thinking that, but you said it, and you're a PhD,
and I'm allowed to be cheesy.
Yeah, you exactly. So it's your thing. So I'm without further ado, just tell our audience about that.
Yeah. So people really know us for like safety first, right? Fall management. Something bad just happened. How do we respond to it as effectively as possible? That's been a lot of safely used journey. Halo is really our full building-wide operating platform. So it's an early warning system that we can be very proactive and predictive with resident needs. It gives us the data that we need around staffing, where we have seen a ton of opportunity there. We've got over 3,000 residents that have been using our staffing insights, and the opportunity to really true up what's actually happening in the rooms, what we thought was supposed to be happening. There's huge opportunity there, but again, doing it in a way that staff love, right? That is key. Like if the staff are pushing back on it, this doesn't work. And so we've built basically each of these products leading up into Halo to make this kind of building-wide comprehensive platform, which includes staffing insights, wellness insights, safety insights, and eCall all together into this one operating platform that how do I actually run a building on a day-to-day basis in the most seamless way possible.
Let's unveil a little bit, practically speaking, for the operator out there. When you hit those target points, those key performance indicators in those areas, what does that look like? I mean, in real time, on the daily operation front for an operator, are they in your program? It's a suite of services, one login. I mean, how does that look?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one login, it can look kind of, there's kind of two different flavors. So there's a world where, hey, I've consolidated down to one EHR, and that's what I really want. Like I've got a caregiver workflow. We're training everybody on that. And that's great. In that world, we're basically integrated with that EHR. We're piping data into it. But we're able to give these real-time detections when certain things happen. We're able to give the e-call so folks can call for help if they need to. And we're piping all of that data into the EHR. So I can actually see directly, you know, what I had in my care plan and then what actually happened. How much time did staff spend in the room? What tasks happened? All of that. And what we're seeing there, what we've seen is about a quarter of residents are getting a care plan adjustment 2 months earlier than they would have otherwise. We're seeing a ton of opportunity to really like true up what we expect to do and what's actually happening. So there's that world where folks have already kind of consolidated down, and we're because we know that the, you know, frontline turnover can be, you know, 80% or even more, that we really need a very simple program that we're training folks on that's very intuitive, has a like Instagram level of easiness to pick up. So if you're using an EHR that has that already, amazing, we're piping data into it. We also see a lot of folks who still have five different EHRs, right? Because they've, you know, different management contracts and so on. And that can be really hard to manage. And especially, again, you need to be able to train everybody on one consistent workflow that we use across the board. And so then we can be that, you know, the caregiver app that folks are using on a day-to-day basis. And then we're integrating with each of the EHRs separately and piping that data in so folks can still see the care plan and what we expected, but we're training caregivers on one workflow.
The stress on operators nowadays, running all the departments and, you know, the healthcare coordinators now, and everybody's in this move and talking about value-based care. Do you believe the Halo equips operators to sort of have a leg up to be positioned for the value-based care opportunity?
Definitely. So I've spent years thinking about value-based care and really this intersection between healthcare and hospitality that is senior housing. And when people in this industry talk about value-based care, they often don't, like, if you're in the healthcare industry, when you think value-based care, you're thinking, I'm taking at-risk contracts, right? So instead of billing fee for service, I am, you know, getting some one bundled payment, and then I'm taking risk. And if it costs more than that to deliver the care, then that's on me, kind of thing. In senior housing, often when folks mean value-based care, what they really mean is just like, we're already providing so much care for residents. We're doing a lot of it private pay. There's got to be some way that if I'm keeping somebody out of the hospital, that I'm getting some of the rewards for that, right? I get some of the credit for all the hard work we're doing to provide really good resident care. Can I get some of the value from that? But often the insurance groups don't want to, they don't know as much about senior housing as they should, and they don't want to share as much as they should. So what we've seen from Safely You is that we'll save on the order of $5,000 per member per year. Wow. Okay. That's a huge amount of savings, but usually it's going to the health insurance industry. So we've got a couple of health insurance groups that will just pay directly for Safely You. But what we've seen more broadly is there is an opportunity for senior housing to just capture more of the value that they're creating. Without kind of taking that full risk or, you know, at-risk payments that folks think about in healthcare when they talk about value-based care. And from that side, what we're seeing is there is a tremendous opportunity to get programs like Safely You paid for in different ways. And so this data can help you have those conversations, but also being able to have the data that shows that you are really reducing risk for that individual is key to being able to do that. So through Halo, you have the data at your fingertips for all of your residents, but you also have these actionable insights. So you can go show, you know, with your physician group, with your therapy company, that we're actually bending the curve. Like, we're not just exposing the data to show how good we are, but we have things that can show us when someone's trending in a direction that maybe isn't great, or when, hey, just suddenly the anomaly detection stuff from the AI standpoint, hey, this person suddenly is behaving in a way that's different from before. So we have that early warning sign to go kind of jump in and try to support.
I'm curious. So you guys seem to, you've been at this a long time, but it seems like you've really hit a stride during some times that are very economically different and growth prohibitive for a lot of operators to where, you know, basically new construction's been at a standstill for years now, but there's been a lot of mergers, acquisitions, and a lot of operators just trying to keep up with emerging tech in their buildings. How's been your strategy to be able to partner with these communities to upgrade from a technology perspective? Because there is a hardware component to what you're doing, but I mean, when a lot of people are pinching pennies and figuring out, like, how do I do this with a software and bundling things together, what's been your strategy to make this move somewhat affordable and have a great ROI for the operators?
I'm going to give kind of the stupid, very simple answer, which is just be a good listener. You know, it's like, as we, you know, we came out to market before the pandemic, right? For us, 2020 was really, really hard. Nothing compared to the folks that are in the building that were like putting their life at risk and all of that and all the fear that, you know, we all remember from 2020. But, you know, we were basically not generating a ton of revenue in those days. It was super early stage, and we had to go out and like make sure that we could still, you know, get into buildings and install our system, that folks would still expand it in the same way, that folks would still sign up for it. And so a lot of like the core DNA in this company is about earning the right. And so like we've listened through those really hard times of like, what do we need to show? And as we came out of the pandemic in the years that followed, to your point around there being no new construction, there was also a ton of pressure from capital partners, right? We see a lot more folks doing SHOP and RIDEA, things like that. At that point, it became really clear to us that folks were expanding our system, but only to the buildings where they thought they could afford it. Okay. And so we had to, if we wanted to grow in the way that, you know, we knew we could really help residents, it wasn't enough to just show clinical outcomes. We were consistently showing, you know, 50% reduction in falls, 10x reduction in emergency room usage, but we had to pull that thread all the way through to show the real ROI, to your point. So it wasn't just, okay, we're only going to put this where we can afford it, but oh my gosh, we can't afford not to do that. And me being an engineer and data scientist at heart, the way we've always run the business is like any of us could be spending our time doing anything else. Like ultimately I want to prove to myself first and foremost that we're really helping. And so from the ROI standpoint, we looked at sales and marketing, and we knew we would anecdotally hear people move in for the system, but it's really hard for operators to know, did they actually move in because of you or did they move in because of staff? You know, the salesperson did a great job, got this amazing staff longevity or, you know, whatever else. Folks would ask us about liability, liability premium reductions. We do have folks that have gotten premium reductions, which has been really cool to see, but it's taken, you know, 5 years of data to have that loss history. And so how do we show, like, when you're starting this program, you know, right now that you're getting ROI from it? And so the thread we pulled on is ultimately length of stay and resident retention, because we could show the people that opt into our system compared to the people that don't. So we've got kind of like a control group right there that we can compare against, you know, the people that are using our system, and we can compare against the baseline period from the 2 years prior. And what we've seen there is that we did a big cohort analysis, sampling from a bunch of different operators, and from something like 4,000 residents, what we saw was what we're seeing is on the order of a 4 month average increase in length of stay, 4 months from the control group and 6 months from the baseline period. Because even the people that aren't using our system, we actually call it the halo effect, not related to Halo the product. Of even people that haven't opted in for our program, folks are seeing opportunities of like, oh, okay, here's something we should change for all of our residents.
Sure.
An example there is like, you know, the mini fridges was one I just saw where it's like someone was getting on the ground to get things out from their mini fridge, but then they can't get back up. Or they're at a little bit more risk when they're doing that. Well, we still want everybody to have access to a mini fridge if they want a mini fridge, but we put it in an elevated way so it's easier for a resident to get access to it. Folks will see things like that and say like, oh, I shouldn't just do that for this resident. Anywhere where we have a mini fridge, let's make sure that that's a little bit more accessible for those kinds of learnings. So I think that the jaw-dropping thing has been that how significant that length of stay increase has been, combined with some data that folks in the industry really weren't looking at before, which is really the 90-day move-out rate. Okay, so when I started looking at this data, we basically saw this really, once people were there past 90 days, there's a good chance they were going to stay for a long time. It's become your home, you have friends, like you're part of the community. But what we were seeing was something like 50% of people were moving out in the first 90 days. This data, we were looking at memory care specifically, and that was shocking to us, that many people are moving out in the first 90 days. And what we were seeing of the people who use Safely U, that number was cut in half. So people were much more likely to stay longer. And I actually saw that personally over the last year with my mom, which was a really tough experience. I can go into if it's helpful.
To your point, the personal connection and anyone you mentioned memory care, that's already such a difficult transition for families. So to have to go through that more than once in a short amount of time is traumatic on the resident, but also the family. You've experienced it personally.
Yeah. So my mom, before she had our system in place, right before Thanksgiving of last year, had a pretty bad fall. So she, you know, we moved in over the summer. So she had been there like right around 90 days. She was still like renting her furniture, things like that, to get a sense of like, it's not home yet. Now we've bought all the furniture, we've settled in. She had a pulmonary embolism maybe 2 years ago. And so she gets short of breath when she's fully laying down. So she likes to sleep sitting up. And her solution to that had been basically sleeping on the couch. Now she's on a new couch, sleeping on the couch, wakes up in the middle of the night, reaches for the arm. It's a different arm. She misses the arm and falls down and falls into the coffee table. She basically fully shatters her upper arm and dislocates her shoulders. Her shoulder's like hanging down here. And we, you know, go into the emergency room. They can see right away. They do CT scan in like 15 minutes. It's clear she needs to be admitted. Like, great, all these horror stories you hear about people having to wait forever in the emergency room. We're not going to have that. They've already done the CT scan. It's quiet. It seems like, surprise, surprise, we wait another 9 hours before we're admitted. Okay, so we spend 9 hours in the hallway, plastic folding chair with her arm like down here, right? And they can't even give her pain meds during that time because you can't, like, you have to be, at least be in a room in the ER for them to give you a narcotic. And we couldn't even get that. Right? So we're just sitting there all day. And my mom has been such a good sport about all of it. We finally get in. She goes into surgery. And they basically tell us, like, did you know your mom had a heart attack? I did not. I did not know that. And they gave me the whole talk of, like, you know, this isn't the highest risk, but she's going on anesthesia and she hasn't for, you know, since she was a kid, and there's risk here. They give me the doctor talk of like something could happen. And she goes into surgery, and I'm just pacing around in the family waiting room completely by myself. Right. And I had asked her before she went in, I was like, "Mom, have you fallen before? Were you falling already?" And she said, "Yes." It's like, that's the whole point, Mom. Like, that's the whole point of our program, is that what we'll see is somebody will fall on average 30 times before they have a fall with injury. People never knew that folks are running around that much, right? And so that's the whole idea, is if we can see how folks are running around, understand what their unmet need is, and address that proactively, we can make a huge impact in people's lives, right? So you can imagine the level of guilt I'm feeling as I'm pacing around here, right? It's like, "Mom, I built this whole thing for you, and I didn't see it. I didn't push harder." And by the way, in that waiting room, there's a TV, and I'm getting ads for other senior housing communities, right? So when we're, that's clicking for me, it's like, oh, when people are moving out in the first 90 days, it's like something like this happens, you're in a vulnerable position. And I'm seeing like, we should be doing some tours. Like, maybe I didn't, you know, do the right thing. Right. But fortunately I know the leadership, you know, I picked this community for a reason. I know this is really good leadership. I really trust that team. And this just happens. Right. So fortunately Mom came out, went into skilled nursing, did rehab, came back to her community, positive end of the story. Like, you know, she's okay now, but it's like, that's the whole core. It's like, we need to be able to have those early warning indicators. And now what I'm obsessing over is the wellness stuff. Because she, in the last 6 months, she's put on a ton of weight. Her dog passed away right after that. Heartbreaking, but was a relief for her. She was really struggling to take care of the dog, but now she's not moving around as much. She's definitely spending more time isolated. She doesn't have just like the love from that dog every day. So we're thinking and really obsessing, and it's a big part of what Halo is that early warning. How do you know that someone's starting to put on weight? How do you know that they're spending more time isolated? And who should that go to? How do we get in front of that? Because there is, you know, shout out to the Bickford folks with their higher path, you know, the way they talk about the higher path. I'm seeing that right now of like, my mom is on the lower path and it sucks. Yeah. It sucks. And how do we like make sure that we're like getting in front of stuff like that?
Well, George, it's so awesome to hear your why. Maybe a lot of people don't know that. I think sometimes in our space, big tech has gotten a bad rap because maybe it's something that's worked in another vertical that, you know, a big firm's just trying to adapt and make a buck in senior housing and maybe not committed to the space or have the similar why. But the team that you've developed that have been grinding for over 10 years and motivated to make a difference. And rolling out this new Halo program, man. Congratulations. And it's fun to see the absorption, people talking about what you're doing. I'm sure that has to be rewarding for you. And thanks for being transparent to show your personal story, to show and tell about that. I know that'll mean a lot to people. Lucas, this is one of the most fun things about what we get a front row seat to tell some of these stories, right?
That's right. We like to pull that common thread and find that story. And it's so awesome to see that the commonality and the passion behind the people in this business. And that's what's always personally drawn me to this industry is the people. It's full of great people like you, George, and your company. Thanks for taking time with us today. Any final comments before we roll out?
There is such a special group of people in senior housing, right? Because it's like there's a group of people who want to make the world better. Love those people in general. There's a group of those people who want to serve seniors, that want to do like the humble, quiet, like the stuff we don't love talking about as a society, but is so rewarding, right? So I just want to appreciate all the people that are in this industry, folks like you. You've been working on this for 20 years. So I know you've grinded. And a lot of people in this industry made it through the pandemic, have made it through hard economic times, whether it's 2008 or more recently as we were all trying to recover occupancy. There's a lot of just really good, smart, hardworking people in this industry that are, you know, have a lot of love for seniors. So it's great to be part of it.
Perfect way to sign off with a big thank you to all the people that do the hard work of caring for older adults every single day. And that's what Bridge the Gap is all about, is telling these stories. If you love this story, go to btgvoice.com, download this and so much more content. Hit us up on LinkedIn. We'd love to hear your story. Thanks for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas. Connect with the BTG Network team and use your voice to influence the industry by connecting with us at btgvoice.com.